how do we effectively scale ETH? The consensus is there are L2s. They'll scale it. That's fine.
Yeah.
Here goes controversial opinion. No, they don't. And no, they will not. They will just make things worse. That's it. And so
explain why I would love to hear your point of view. As in, why do you think they will make things worse and not better?
See, it's before we had numerous of L2s, we've had ETH with all the liquidity inside, and it was a fit for so many different applications because of the liquidity inside. Like if we're talking about DeFi applications, okay, because that's what it's a fit for. That's the only fit for it, to be honest. Yeah. And it was a fit for it because it had so much liquidity inside. It's like right now what's going on is that rollups came in, they started literally balkanizing ETH, like, you know, tearing apart its liquidity and bringing it to themselves and just fragmenting it. So fragmenting it, it's like no matter how fast and if you can proceed transactions, like no matter how fast and you can process transactions on like each particular rollup, if you have nothing to operate with in there, it's pointless.
Hello, explorers, innovators, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. I'm your host, Sam Kamani, and on today's episode, I am interviewing Misha Komaro. He is the founder of Nil Foundation. And today we are going to talk about all things L2, L1s, Ethereum, EVM, sharding, scaling blockchains, and so much more. So if you are into the real tech behind blockchains, then this episode is for you. Let's talk about the future of blockchains with Misha Komaro. Nothing in this episode should be taken as investment advice. And if you like this episode, please share it on your social media. With that out of the way, let's get into it. So Misha, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. Looking forward to interviewing you. Finally, we got connected and got this opportunity to share about Nil Foundation. But first of all, my first question when we're getting started is, how did you end up in crypto? What led you to Web3, blockchain, or decentralized tech?
Look, I always considered this industry as a database industry. It's effectively just database industry, but it's database industry, which is supposed to work in like untrusted environments.
Yes.
So that's the thing. So it's not like I ended up in crypto or something, but like designing databases, like digging deep into that. And it was just like, that was my passion. I was like, oh, okay. It's like a new kind of cluster. And that's what it is. So that resulted in just building databases, one protocol after another, and designing one protocol after another. So meanwhile, I got my degree, and it was very closely related to computational complexity theory. I was like it's not a long road from there to applied cryptography. So yes. Here we go.
Yeah. To me, I see even like the whole cloud thing as a database. It's just a remote database, the cloud, remote centralized databases, the cloud. That's how I see it. And this is just and how big is cloud? It is massive. That's where AWS and Google Cloud and Azure, and they all make their money from. And then I
not
feel
really.
Like, okay, not yeah, really. Yeah. Would love to learn. Why?
It's like you gave an example of, for example, AWS or something.
Yes.
Like AWS is not like, AWS doesn't act as a monolith. It doesn't act anymore as a monolithic database. Last time we've been renting, or we've been, I don't know, just looking for like remotely hosted database clusters on the internet somewhere as a service or something, it was back in the 90s. Like for real. That's it. That was it. After that, nobody provides monolithic databases. Everybody provides like some, and it's much more complicated than just monolithic database. It's like in here, in the crypto world, we are still at that stage when we work on top of monolithic databases, when we work on top of, like, and when I'm talking monolithic, I'm not talking about like monolithic versus modular, okay? I'm not talking about this discourse. I'm talking about monolithic databases from a database perspective.
Yeah.
And no matter the way you put that into the architecture, like you still work with database directly. Like you do not work. Yeah. So I would say we're still yet to catch the industry outside of crypto in terms of technical like architecture. So that's the thing. And that was the idea. That was the initial idea behind Nil, was something like, hey, let's make this crypto industry to catch up with all the world outside in terms of technical capabilities.
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So where does Null Foundation, where does that fit in? What problems does Null Foundation solve?
Yeah. As I said, effectively, it's like NIL was started as the way to try to catch up the crypto industry technical capabilities with the outside of crypto industry technical capabilities. And what kind of, for example, SLA or what kind of capacity we have for databases outside of crypto? A couple of terabytes in the state, a couple of petabytes in the state? Sure, let's go for it. We have a load of thousands of thousands of transactions per sec on the cluster, on the database cluster? Yeah, sure. It's Uber just single-handed. It's like Uber. It's like, for example, Uber, only Uber does, like, it's like on its internal data lake, does, you know, like just enormous amounts of transactions, much more than the whole crypto industry does. Like enormous amount of, you know, like data write-ins. And yeah, so that's the thing. And the idea back in April 2018, that was the idea that, you know, after working on for a couple of years, like more than a couple of years, sorry, I would say several years, on the code which was, you know, left by Dan Latimer after Dan Latimer's like a Stimit, BitShare, some predecessors of EOS back then. The architecture of it was very similar to Kafka. Not kidding. Like internally, it's very similar to Kafka.
Yeah.
The only difference is the way you authenticate the commit log of it. And I was like, hey, why can't we design a database which could handle literally everything? Just using the architecture and approaches which we have in the more traditional industry and try to put it together with what we have in the crypto industry already is to make it work in a trustless environment. That started as an experiment. Like we tried to prototype some first version of this thing for a couple of years to try to introduce like a DBMS which could work in an untrusted environment. Then we realized when the prototype came out, we realized that, okay, we will launch it and we will make it possible to work with like whatever data inside will be required for people to trust us. Yes. What's the point then? So what the hell? Then we're like, okay, like how do we make it trustless? We got to make sure that people can verify all this. The traditional database architecture is compute over data, right? All of it is all about that. Just compute over data. It's how do you make sure that, how do you stop trusting this compute layer effectively? Mm-hmm. You got to prove it and you got to verify it. Now it's obvious. Back then in, I don't know, 2018 to 2020, it was not really not obvious. It was like not obvious at all. We were like, hey, how to make it trustless? We got to prove the computations. And to prove the computations, the only way is to build a proof system. it's like to dig into proof systems. So that's how we started. Just being more oriented towards proof system cryptography, because we needed that. We prototyped our own proof system. We realized that for the sake of proving that the access to the data is being done correctly, we need A, consensus proofs, B, state proofs, and C, we would need a very specific proof system which would allow to do this whole thing. Back then, there was no Blanc or like anything like this. There was even no cryptography suite which is capable of handling that. It was only LipSnark. And some early seeds, early roots of ArcWorks. That's it. So we built a cryptography suite of ours. And then we were like, by 2021, we were like, okay, now we need state proofs. And the only project which had state proofs was like MinaGuys. So we came to MinaGuys and we were like, oh, okay, so you have something interesting. You've gotten this. It's interesting to us. Interesting for you. Let's build state proof verification on ETH because we will learn a lot. You will get what you need when. It's like then Toli, like Solana Foundation, joined this effort as well. And accidentally, this is how ZK Bridges were born. Like in the beginning of 2021, this is how ZK Bridges was, like ZK Bridging was born in general, like at all. Yeah. Like I do even remember that call when we made up that day. Like for real.
That's
that's the thing. Then it's like we wrote all of those circuits. We wrote them manually. And we were like, hell, we will not do that again anymore because it's just too complicated. How do we make it? How do we try to make it simpler? Like we will do a circuit compiler. And so we did a circuit compiler. So it's like we patched LLVM by the time of 2022. It's like we had some prototype of patched LLVM, which allowed us to compile circuits, which people were still writing by them manually, just by libraries, yada, yada. For example, Scroll folks, PSE folks, and all these people have spent enormous amount of time and money to build a ZKVM circuit by hand. And we were like, no, we're not going to do that. So we built a circuit compiler. And since then, we tried to compile every circuit we had, every circuit we needed to build. And that's one, it's definitely not the first circuit compiler, but one of the first circuit compilers, which allowed to compile high level languages, like existing languages, like Rust or CDP into circuits. Yes. Once we did the state proofs, once we did all the state proofs, started generating lots of large circuits, we were like, okay, it's like, how do we deal with the proof generation for that? Like we would need to prove computation over data. That's effectively virtual machine proving, all right? That's effectively ZKEVM, okay? That's what people right now call ZKEVMs. So we need to prove consensus proofs to make sure that we interact with the right data, different databases. Yeah. And that's also very troublesome. And we quickly realized that we're not going to be, once again, like we were in 2020, like a storage of data, like manual storage of data, which proof takes which time to generate. And which hardware and what's the cost of it? Because back in 2020, we were heavily involved with Filecoin craze in mainland China. And people were literally like bunching the Filecoin mining machines to each other. And somehow that happened, that our cryptography suite, we needed to develop our cryptography suite back then. We have developed Filecoin Prover on top of it. And back in 2020, we were literally supplying this Filecoin mining software to 2020, 2021, we were supplying this mining software to Filecoin miners. I don't know, like a very significant part, I would say. I don't know. I can't vouch for some particular percentage, but I know that very significant part, like for sure, of Filecoin mining machines, which were produced in Shenzhen in mainland China, folks, that they were literally selling to each other. Half of China was selling Filecoin mining machines to another half of China. And significant part of that contained our software. and I literally had a Google spreadsheet, like Excel spreadsheet, right? With like where I had noted which proof was taken, so what time did it took to be generated? What's the cost of it? Which hardware is used? And yeah, I was like, the hell? I'm not gonna be like accumulator of this information once again, but now for our proofs. I'm not gonna be doing that. So yeah. We decided like, okay, we'll just go with some marketplace for proof generation. So this is how the proof market of ours got started. In the beginning of 2023, we published it. And since then, everyone calls this whole proof generation networks and everything proof markets. I think it was the first proof market. And it was like for sure the first proof market. And meanwhile, this whole circuit compiler plus proof market plus everything was built originally for GBMS project of ours, which we tried to merge in database industry achievements to crypto.
Yes.
And it's like we finally got to that point when we had all the necessary components. Like everything was developed enough. Theory was developed enough. We had all the necessary achievements. Some of them were done by the third parties. Good. Perfect. All right. Like some of them were done by us. And so we just started incorporating everything back. And we realized that maybe the best positioning for it would be, we came up with this position, we came up with a way how to properly put it in, is to maybe try to make a sharding extension for ETH, try to upgrade ETH, not just on a protocol level upgrade ETH, but upgrade ETH with sharding, but without this time, without necessity for upgrading ETH itself. That's the thing. That's how we came up with ZK sharding, which actually the thing which we used everything, all of our tooling, all of our infrastructure to build this thing. Yeah. Because that also with the DBMS in the core, ZKEVM being compiled by ZKLLVM, so not to build circuit manually, with the proof market supplying proof generation, and all of the basically database achievements within this sharded execution layer with proper MapReduce alike thing. We literally dropped MapReduce alike thing. Polygon came up with something similar a month or two after we announced it. They called it aggregation layer, but effectively it's just MapReduce we brought from the DBMS industry into this whole thing. So that's the thing. So yeah, that's what we did. It's yeah, It's like in relation to the original execution layer of ETH, it works as a ZK rollup alike manner because it still has ZK EVM, it verifies it in there, just like rollups do. But in relation to the consensus layer, it works more second execution layer or like an extension of ETH because we try to maintain composability with ETH as well. So we could operate with original Ethereum as with just our shard. Because we're sharding extensions, and what the hell are we doing it for if we can't operate with original ETH in a composable manner? Fun fact is that after 2 months, I don't know, maybe after months or something, people started widely talking about universal synchronous composability. Like Justin started his like regular calls about universal synchronous composability and how to achieve that. And yeah, so some people tried to achieve that with shared sequencers. Some people try to achieve that, like some people try to maintain that by different methods. On our side, we say that you don't need that. It's just ZK sharding that works. You don't even need to touch Ethereum protocol. Because back then, sharding failed because everybody was like, no, we're not going to upgrade the protocol. I mean, let's not upgrade the protocol. Too complicated, too risky, development hell, no. And maybe it's for good. This time, you don't need to upgrade this to make it work.
So currently, what are some of the use cases who's using Nil Foundation or ZK sharding? Yeah, or your product?
It's all of our use cases effectively are split to two categories, right? It's like the first category is so-called ZK apps. It's like ZK apps are those applications which are built on top of Circuit Compiler plus Proof Market. And this is what we were running around with for the last year. Because it's like before we went out with ZK sharding as like as a product. So those ZK apps effectively is like ZKML, ZK bridges, ZK Oracle, ZK games, even ZK games. Wow. There are, for example, Lido has a ZK Oracle, which guards fake Ethereum issuance information, TVL effectively, from being forged by validators, by Lido's validators. So that the last security bit, which we have left back then when we were like effectively designing it, because it was born as a child of collaboration between PDB Validator and Nil. So that's the thing. And back then we had no way to fix it. And we were like, okay, we'll just leave it as like 9 oracles, which would supply information. And if 5 of them are fine, we will use them. And that security assumption, which we wanted to get rid of. And so, yeah, Nil got rid of it, finally, last year. So now, fake Ethereum issuance goes nowhere. There is no chance it will go south.
Yeah.
So that's like an example. Another example is like ZK Bridges projects. For example, one of the projects, which was like ZK App project, was being a Mina ZK Bridge project and ZK Bridges in general, because it's just convenient to build circuits on top of the compiler to verify state and consensus proofs on ETH. There's like, for example, to make sure that it's possible to bridge from and to ETH in a trustless manner, there were even like experiments, some third-party team have done experiments to prove Casper FFG consensus for the sake of fully trustless bridging. That's also one of the ZK app use cases of ours. ZKML, there are folks which are doing ZKML extension for ZKLVM, the circuit compiler. And they are being used by protocols like AlterScope or something, as I remember, who provide risk parameters to lenders, and they need to prove different ML models to ETH for that. So as far as I know, this is what's going on. Again, it's like at this point, I don't even know what's going on in there. It's just too far, but that's what I know. That's what I know. There is even a project, ZK Games. It's like I mentioned ZK Games.
Yes.
Like back in Istanbul, three months ago, back in Istanbul.
DevConnect, yes.
One of the teams which kind of uses our like toolchain, they made a joke, and not like a joke, but they as a joke, as a fun project to do.
Yes.
They presented ZK Doom. They effectively just proven Doom speedrun. They were like, hey, we've proven Doom. You can play Doom, prove it, and then prove it to Ethereum that, hey, you've completed Doom in this amount of time. So that was like provable Doom. They called it ZK Doom. And the fun thing, people started like using different other provable toolchains. People also started trying to prove Doom just to show that their toolchain can do at least the same. That's also fun. So yeah, you can play Doom on Ethereum now. It's like almost 3 months now. Like almost 3 months now, you can play Doom on Ethereum. So that's like ZK apps. That's the key apps.
Yeah.
What would, so if we're talking about applications on top of the sharding itself, sharded execution apps, yes, effectively. Yeah. Leaky sharding right now is not in a production state yet. Test version. So some of the applications which are running around in that, like our own root market runs on top of leaky sharding, of course, because that's the only thing which can handle it cheap enough. Because we tried to put it somewhere else, didn't work. Like some folks back in Istanbul, like Gamma Leaky Hack, tried to deploy it at Scrolls Testnet, and Scrolls Testnet got stuck because of it. So now you know how to get scroll down. Like you just gotta try to deploy proof market in there. that's gonna be a shame. That's gonna be a bummer if somebody tries to do that.
Yeah. Just as you're talking, it makes me realize how young this whole field is, as in that how new everything is. We are pretty much making the ground level stuff, or not even that. We are making the basement of the structure.
Like, And people who actually put their money like on stake using all of this tech in its current state, it's literally, you can't call them any other way. That's it. Like for real. It's like, you know, guys.
Yeah, it is. That's why institutions still keep their distance. Because this tech is foreign. It's even the people in our industry, they are degens in the real sense. It's like, to me, even the 2021, the Wall Street Bets hype and the whole GameStop and stuff, to me, compared to the DeFi degens, those people look professional. The Wall Street Bets people look, because our whole field didn't exist. They are betting on a tech that is 80 years old, like the stock market has been there for so long.
Yeah.
And like the whole options, and of course they get like leverage with options and other derivatives and stuff, but very old. It's been existing for decades. Our field is in some cases weeks of months old.
Yeah. So several days old.
Yes. Yes. And some is still in testnet, not even in production. Yeah. So we are the real degens when it comes to like people who take part in all the DeFi stuff, as well as any of these of this tech. And even in that ZK, everything with zero knowledge proof, all this tech is so new. I feel like I have a question for you. What's your view that is different to the mainstream crowd?
Okay. Yeah, I see. It's like mainstream crowd view is being defined by the opinion of people, I don't know, it's like some influential people, right? Some people have like a loud voice who can say things and everybody's, oh, this is true if this fellow said that. And the nuance is that these kind of people, if they're not DJs, as you mentioned today, usually these kind of people are because the way they say things is broad enough for you. It's like for you to be able to fit into this, like to fit into this
narrative
field of what they covered, like a field of what they covered, like while saying this. And like the only chance to not to get into this, just what they said about, is to be like just a total idiot and say something like otherwise, like otherwise, like completely otherwise, something really dumb. So if I say something and if I have something to say which is very different from what people are thinking, then it would have been dumb. I have something to say which might be a little bit controversial, but it's still within the norm, right?
Yeah.
So, for example, regarding the sharding stuff, what's the consensus right now about how do we effectively scale ETH? The consensus is there are L2s, they'll scale it. That's fine.
Yeah.
Here goes controversial opinion. No, they don't. And no, they will not. They will just make things worse. That's it. And so
explain why. Okay, I'd love to hear. I do interview people from the L2 ecosystem as well, from everyone, like lots of different L2s I've interviewed, but I would love to hear your point of view, as in why do you think they will make things worse and not better?
See, it's before we had numerous of L2s, we've had ETH with all the liquidity inside, and it was a fit for so many different applications because of the liquidity inside. Like if we're talking about DeFi applications, okay, because that's what it's a fit for. That's the only fit for it, to be honest. Yeah. And it was a fit for it because it had so much liquidity inside. It's like right now what's going on is that rollups came in, they started literally balkanizing ETH, like, you know, tearing apart its liquidity and bringing it to themselves and just fragmented it. So fragmenting it, it's like no matter how fast and if you can proceed transactions, like no matter how fast and you can process transactions on like each particular rollup, if you have nothing to operate with in there, then it's pointless. It doesn't matter. That's the first thing. Second thing, even if you have something to operate within a particular rollup with, then you stumble upon a different thing, which is called rollup throughput. It's like rollups don't scale. That's the nuance. And that's the rollups themselves don't scale. And they don't scale because, I mean, you can't add more machines to make a product, to make a protocol more performant. That's the first thing. Second of all, the bottleneck is also like, in for ZK rollups, in most cases, it is like ZK VM proving capacity. I mean, you can't prove more than the amount of transactions per second. You can't forget it. Otherwise, it will not be secure. And for optimistic rollups, the bottleneck is a DA. So you're capped. But you're capped with a quite low thing. With a quite low ceiling. And that's effectively literally yesterday we put out some kind of thesis about ZK sharding that, hey guys, I mean, rollups are only making things different. Rollups are only making things more difficult. It's like rollups as L2s and rollups are only making things worse. You gotta go the other way. And yeah, so that's not everyone will like this, but that's what it is. What would you prefer? Like you personally, what would you prefer? To operate on ETH, which you're sure about and, you know, like which you haven't seen going down for years. Or would you prefer to operate on a newborn rollup, which has only, I don't know, like 100 million TDL?
No, I would not.
Who the hell hosts that?
Yes. The thing is that I would prefer ETH with much higher TPS.
Yes,
that's it. So, the promise of ETH has been that how it has multiple stages is the merge, the verge, the surge, the verge, the purge, and the splurge. But isn't that the whole point? That's what it's supposed to do. And by the end of it will have 100,000 TPS. So I asked the same question to the Polygon guys, that this was over a year ago, year and a half ago, or maybe more, that, hey, that if ETH is already going to do this and going to get to 100,000 transactions per second, then why do we need like Polygon? Why? What's the point? So he's okay. So then he basically calculated about that. It showed me that, okay, in the number of users, he said that is nearly not enough, especially once you have use cases of gaming. You can have potentially hundreds of millions of people playing a game with lots more transactions going every second, that it doesn't support the gaming use case. Back then, this is maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, that just the gaming use case alone would need more transactions per second than what it can do currently. And that's why you need things like L2s and Polygon and other things.
I can give you a little bit different. I can give you not like slightly, but quite a different answer to that.
Yes, please go ahead.
All right. Let's say this way, the current roll dive of ETH will not lead to ETH with high throughput. Why? Because the roadmap of it effectively puts in priority not a throughput, which, I mean, it's a classic database like gap theorem. Yes. Like you have consensus, you have availability, you have partitioning, right? You have consistency, availability, partition. So some protocols, like Solana, for example, they put as a priority consistency, but they don't care about anything else. And that creates security and, as we say in this industry, decentralization concerns, right?
Yes.
So that's the problem, which Tony is yet to deal with this perception. But they've put consistency as their primary priority, and that's what they designed the protocol for. ETH just takes a different approach. ETH is designed with a different approach in mind. ETH puts availability and partitioning as a priority. ETH doesn't care about consistency. ETH doesn't care about high consistency. Like, nobody cares. If so, it will never have a high throughput because the design of it and the mindset of those who design the protocol is like puts as a priority entirely different things. It's supposed to do a different thing. So it will never scale itself without tricks. And if you're about to scale it with L2s, then we're coming to the same one you mentioned, right?
Yes.
Then we're coming to the same situation that we got a bunch of L2s. Each of them is fragmented. You can just split everyone. Every single one of them is just empty. And or if it's not empty, then it has each of them has 20 mil bucks of TVL and ETH has no TVL and we have no ETH afterwards. We broke ETH. Thank you. It's like...
I understand what you mean. So, I understand. But it always happens, like, I don't know, fragmentation and kind of defragmentation. So it feels every bull run, there is a lot of fragmentation and lots of new projects are born and they all try to do their own thing. So what's the solution? Where do we go? What do we do?
Well, it's like there are several approaches. Again, some folks propose, like Justin pushes the idea that shared sequencers will solve all this issue, like that it would be possible to just put a transaction to a shared sequencer and then just to operate between rollups and choose a rollup, which is the cheapest to execute. And that's like this way we could maintain synchronous composability.
Yes.
The problem is with this approach is that the security of a shared sequencer now becomes the security of the whole system. And the shared sequencers effectively play a role of like separate L1s. With this approach, we're exchanging the security of ETH to the security of shared sequencer. And that's the first problem. The second problem is rollups have absolutely no economic incentive to use a shared sequencer. It's much more economically viable for rollups to maintain a centralized sequencer to capture all the EVV, and that's it. That's it. So that's one of the approaches. Justin has a long way to go with it. And if he manages to push it forward, sure, might be. That's a lot of obstacles to overcome, economic viability obstacles to overcome. That's the problem, and that's going to be very hard to do, like extremely hard to do. Maybe even harder than to launch another even harder than this. So it's like another approach is to try to aggregate different protocols together, verify all of those proofs on like some L2 or like something, and then verify that on ETH. But this gives us proper security of all of these things. But that removes composability. You can't operate between different databases. And by the way, like we spoke in the beginning of the conversation, our traditional non-crypto world doesn't operate over just a single database anymore, but it operates over very complicated abstractions over different databases, like over databases. Do you feel how we finally get to that stage? It's like databases over databases, which is transactions over transactions. Finally, we're finally maturing. We're finally succeeding with bringing this like database management system achievements into crypto industry. Everybody realizes that we're getting closer to that. God damn it. So basically this aggregation approach, it doesn't maintain composability. That's like a little bit of nuance. Third approach is the approach we propose. That's the approach when you gotta maintain the L2 itself, composable and horizontally scalable from the very beginning. Yes, it can interact. Yes, it can operate with ETH and with maybe other rollups, just like with its shard. It's something we call sharding, whatever. And that's more similar to what was initially proposed as like a sharding protocol upgrade for ETH. It's much more similar to that. And does it maintain synchronous composability? Yeah. It's like cross-shard composability. Yeah. So what's the downside? The complexity of it. It gives you everything you want. It gives you like effectively ETH with lower transaction fees. It gives you like composability with different rollups. It gives you composability with different shards. The downside of that, yes, complexity. So that's the thing. Yeah, three different approaches. Let's see what happens.
Oh, there'll be a fourth approach within, I don't know, a few months. I don't know, in a year. I don't know.
Somebody will make it up. Yeah.
Yeah, make it up. Yeah, make a hybrid of some two different approaches together. Put them together.
I bet.
Yes, the least likely scenario takes place.
It's three months ago, we had only ZK sharding. It's 3 months. 3 months later, we have already three approaches. Just wait for three more months.
Yeah, exactly. You said it. What's your opinion? I still it's something we were talking about earlier about we are like really small. Like even if you look at Ethereum, it's got 1 million monthly active users. I was just looking at Dune Analytics while we were talking. And if you look at Web2 app like Duolingo, that has 74 million monthly active users. And that's just one app. I'm not even talking about all the different apps that live on, say, iOS or Android or something. So it's just that our ecosystem is so small. What would it take? What would make it grow?
See, just from my experience, what I see is like the primary complexity of why this whole crypto industry stays isolated. And let's be honest, it stays isolated. Not entirely like it was like 10 years ago, but it's still isolated. The reason why it stays isolated is because, first of all, it's not clear for like non-crypto apps, why do they need cryptos? And to make them benefit, if there is a way to benefit, because not always there is a way to benefit, let's be honest. If there is a way to benefit for a non-crypto application from using crypto inside, from using crypto or not the crypto, okay, screw crypto. Like we're not talking about like financial thing. We're talking about reducing trust assumption within, it's like within the application behavior scenario, right? So if such an application can benefit from it, then the design of such a mechanism becomes so complicated that effectively like native crypto people got to take on that. And when in the same time, native crypto people, they will not go, for example, as you mentioned, Duolingo, right? They will not go to Duolingo and they will just introduce that to them. We'll say, okay, here we go. Like, here goes a nice feature for you. They'll be like, okay, thank you. Perfect. Yeah. No, of course not. And it has to be like some kind of collaboration of a crypto project and non-crypto project or something. But in the same time, it's like for non-crypto apps, the difference in the size of theirs, like of the user base of theirs, is so large that they don't need these collaborations with crypto projects because crypto projects for them are just nothing. It's just small for them. It's
like one for most of them, yeah.
It's a rounded error. So why do you need to collaborate with them as a project when you when the only thing you got to do is just assemble the team internally and put crypto inside of your app as a feature or reduce trust assumption internally inside your app as a feature. The reason crypto doesn't go mainstream is because it's too proud. It's just too proud. It tries to be equal partner to applications which are like orders of magnitude larger than them.
Yes.
For example, again, Uber has 1.5K employees. Like, damn Uber, just application for just taxi service, yes. Right? Ride sharing app. It's like 1.5K employees. Like, which other crypto project has 1.5K employees and has pretty much the same valuation? Just one. I'll give you a hint. Just one, or maybe two.
Exchanges have lots of employees.
Binance.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
Binance. The only one.
Interviewed Kraken, but this was at the peak of the last market bull run, and they had 2,500 at that time. But now they now it's probably less than 1,500.
Smaller.
Much smaller now. Not the bull run right now. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, effectively, as you can see, it's like even the biggest crypto players are they become slightly comparable with what's going on like outside of crypto. And just like the scale is so small. And
Uber has 30,000. Uber has 30,000 employees.
okay, I messed up then.
No, okay. we don't have a single company. We do not have single company. In fact, all the exchanges combined would be that.
Yes. So see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like crypto cannot be an equal partner to outside of crypto companies yet, and will not be able to be that way for many years ahead. But in the same time, it's like crypto people are trying to be equal partners and not realizing that outside of crypto apps, for them, is just a nice feature. And in the same time, the design they would need to implement to make it work within their apps is so complicated that nobody except the brightest minds in crypto can do it. And the brightest minds in crypto are very proud. So they will not go on any other terms like to work with outside of crypto apps as with like except as equal partners. So we gotta either grow, either die.
I love your take on this because this is the first time I have asked this question to so many people. I've interviewed hundreds of founders of major projects, and this is the first time I heard the stake. So it is very good. Only a humble person can come up with such an answer. Because yeah, that is very true. And in bull runs, big companies have collaborated, but they have collaborated over a niche. Nike would collaborate for some NFT project or Top Shots or whatever, or NBA would collaborate. And they have, and how many people watch it or interact with the NBA brand? 150 million? It's not even close. Yeah, it's nothing. So they did that just for a short time. And just because that happened, every crypto project started thinking that we would get that type of big deals with Shopify and Amazon. And no, but it's, as you said, it is very true. What are some of the challenges that you are facing, or what are some of your biggest challenges?
let's say it this way. One of the biggest challenges, like if you ask this question, I've asked this question like 100, ask this question 100 crypto people, and they will all tell you that we got to scale the infrastructure. So no, of course we have to. But before we do that, and while we do that, we gotta also take on the use cases design. We gotta find terms. We gotta figure out which term would work for the outside of crypto world to try to step into this world and to try to benefit from it. And that's the most challenging thing which is out there. It's effectively mechanism design, architecture. Solution design problem. It's like I don't know how to call that. It's a problem of finding terms. It's like on which outside of crypto world would be comfortable to interact with this whole little bubble we have. Yeah. So that's the thing. Like finding use cases is the biggest problem. Designing those use cases and making what we build in here actually useful for these use cases. So it's being useful is the most challenging. Yes. It's the most challenging thing. And not just for me, for everyone, okay?
Only
after you find this like product market fit, you can think about like scaling the infrastructure or something. Like only after that, you gotta start doing that.
It's just like I was speaking with a prominent VC in this space, and then she was saying that, look, like 90% of the crypto projects you see right now are not going to be there in 2 to 3 years' time. Even if we have a very big bull market, just because there is no real life use case for them outside of crypto, unless we find those use cases and we can communicate those use cases to people, we will have a challenge. So that's.
But here goes another nuance: is to be able to communicate these use cases to outside of crypto world. You gotta be big, stable, and interesting enough inside the crypto world. So you gotta at first grow inside the crypto world somehow. Okay, it's like apparently covering all the crypto use cases, and then you gotta go and try to communicate with outside of crypto world. Because if you're not big enough, then you're just a joke. It's like for everybody outside of crypto, you're just a joke. Nobody will take it seriously. So there's absolutely no point, for example, for a project which a small crypto project, there's absolutely no point to try to go out and try to communicate with non-crypto companies to try to get them in or something. No, just forget it. You gotta first grow inside this little bubble. You gotta take all of that bubble, not all of that bubble, but you gotta be noticeable in that. And only after that, maybe somebody will stop considering you as a joke. So. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, love what you're doing. Final question, and that is, do you have an ask? Is there anything you're looking for, or if you're hiring anything or funding anything, feel free to share.
Let's say the primary thing which we're going to be looking for in the next half a year or something is we're going to be trying to pursue the goal of just getting out the publicly usable cluster tech. Because, I mean, if we don't have this cluster tech, we'll not be able to convince anyone that's the way. And, you know, answering to your question, what am I looking for and what we are looking for, like in the next, half a year, is we're looking for ways to convince everybody, to prove to everybody that this is the best way to go forward. Like for us to stop fighting between each other at last within this little bubble and just get together around some idea and stop being a joke to the outside world.
That's a good one. But we do have like, lots and lots of funny characters in the crypto world. So we, I think that not being a joke to the outside world is going to take some time.
Yeah, but come on. Like that's the only way, all right? It's like I'm gonna be looking for the ways for it's like for us all to grow up a little bit.
Yeah.
To convince everybody to grow up a little bit.
I was gonna say, have you been to a crypto conference? Have you been to any of the crypto parties?
I'm gonna be at one in the day.
One of the biggest one, in fact, in North America.
it's like one of the biggest jokes, like in this hemisphere.
It is all crypto conferences are that they're pretty wild, and that's also what does attract a certain kind of people to crypto. It always has.
So it's like somebody dressing as a pickle.
You'll find lots. I find Shiba Inu dogs. I found all sorts of type people in the mascot stuff. These are like
people.
These are the programmers and stuff. And I was in esports, and then you go to esports type, and then people are in all in their cosplay and stuff. And the people in like gaming and esports are less wild than the people in cryptos. And they are just like a hobbyist. And these people are doing, and it's like a multi-trillion dollar ecosystem now, if you look at the market cap.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. These people have crazy TVLs and DeFi projects and stuff, and just trading and doing things. And
yeah,
it's like fake money, but it has real implications. But it's crazy. It's crazy times. But yeah. So with that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put all the links to Nil Foundation and to your social profiles and stuff in the description and the show notes. So if anyone wants, they can reach out to you in helping this ecosystem
grow up a little bit.
Yes, grow up a little bit. But it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. And yeah, wish you best of luck for ETH Denver.
Yeah. Gonna be something. Gonna be a shit show.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening or watching this episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. By now, you know the drill. Leave a comment or share this episode with a friend and leave a review. I would love to hear from you. So that's why my DMs are open. Reach out to me, especially if you are a founder building a product in Web3. Then I would love to hear from you. What are your challenges? Is there anything that I can help you or my community can help you with? Thank you once again and wish you best of luck in building your startup or your project.